This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everyone. I trust that if you are traveling today, you are keeping those speeds down, hydroplaning a definite possibility, as well as those high winds that we're experiencing here, at least on the eastern portion of the island. Warmer temperatures, but man, that rain is coming down. So please be careful out there. And spare a moment to consider the residents of Central Labrador and the coast of Labrador, of course. That area is being nailed with some very heavy snow, 65 centimeters. Meters down so far, and the winds are now starting to pick up and get very, very blustery and blizzard-like. So please be careful out there, anyone who considers going out. And if you don't have to go out, why don't you just sit back and tune in to some radio. As of yesterday, Newfoundland and Labrador had 23 confirmed cases of COVID-19. That's the highest number since May. And that includes the first confirmed case in a school setting. Contact tracing testing now underway. We'll get a better picture of the extent of that possible exposure when the latest numbers come out this afternoon. There are three clusters of the virus now in the province, one in Grand Bank, one in St. John's, and one in Deer Lake. Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Janice Fitzgerald, yesterday indicated that officials believe the Grand Bank and St. John's clusters are largely contained, but the full extent of the Deer Lake cluster is not yet known. The school, Elwood Elementary in Deer Lake, is closed for the time being, with a further update expected sometime today. Public health officials indicate all cases can be linked back to travel. That prompted government to temporarily pull out of the Atlantic bubble. And as of midnight tonight, anyone traveling to Newfoundland and Labrador from the other Atlantic provinces must self-isolate for 14 days. That's for the next 2 weeks anyway. Here to talk a bit about some of the measures in place are PC opposition members, education critic Craig Party. Hi, Craig.
Hello, Linda. Pleased to be with you.
And finance critic Tony Wakeham. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Linda. Good to be here.
So I'll start with you, Craig. You're a former educator, of course, and school administrator. What do you think of the approach to the Deer Lake situation?
Well, I guess we're in our infancy, Linda, with knowing the details about the situation and the extent of it. And I guess now that we need to be very cautionary moving forward. But I want to say from the onset that as an administrator, principal for 16 years, I said my heart goes out to the faculty, staff, and in particular the parents and the students in this area. I've always predicted when I looked at it and just thought the law of averages would suggest that eventually we will have an incident in our school. And what I was thinking, it may have been the metro area just by the sheer size of the population. So I always preface now any example that we would have, knowing that this, how we handle this one, we need to learn from. And I think we would err on the side of caution. So we're early. I'm pleased that they immediately closed the school in order to make sure that there's a deep cleaning within the school to put people's mind at ease. Maybe the call could have been a little earlier, Linda, instead of having 25% of the population with 75% of the population opting to keep their children at home until they felt comfortable knowing that it was a safe place for their children to attend. So I look at that situation, but it is our first one. So we will learn as we go. And I would think that many would suspect that it may not be the last one that we in and out of the school or we would have in our school system. So we need to make sure that we do a good job learning by this particular situation and projecting ourselves that in cases in a much larger school and a more complicated school setting, which would be the junior high, senior high in a metro area.
Well, it's one thing to talk about these things conceptually. It's a whole other thing if you happen to be a parent or a loved one of a staff member there. How do you allay the obvious fears that will stem from something like that?
To allay in this particular situation, Linda?
Yeah, anytime COVID enters a school setting.
Communication is ideal. We talked about the cleaning of the school to make sure that there's a deep cleaning. I keep going back to the cohorts. Cohorts are easy to maintain, or relatively easier to maintain, in an elementary school system than what it would be in a junior high and a senior high. And I think everyone would agree with that. So this particular case is a elementary school where the cohort, and when I say the cohort for your listeners, I'm talking about a certain group that maintains or stays together in a building, a class, and therefore that if ever you have a situation such as this, we can zero in on the particular class, knowing that they had none or very limited interaction with the rest of the population. But in reality, Linda, when we look at our school system, we have siblings that would of the children that would be in a particular class that are also in the population. So in any school setting, we have quite a mix and an interaction and a connectivity between these cohorts. So even at the elementary one. So I would say to make sure that we trace, they do a good job with the tracing of the virus and the contents. But it would be very difficult to look at the school system and try to analyze the contacts and the connections that would occur or the contact tracing in a school setting. So to belayed affairs, a cleaning, and I would think, I said from the onset, Linda, when we were preparing back in August, that we would love to see a reduction in the class size. So if we had a cohort that was only 15 students, that's much more manageable than a cohort that would have 30 students with the connections. So
the NLTA continues to raise questions and concerns about what they see as the relaxation of COVID restrictions in schools. Do you expect that that will change, that we'll be a little more vigilant nowadays?
I would think so. I know the NLTA has come out with the mask, and I think that is a solid intervention when you look at the wearing of a mask, because if anything that we can do to further prevent the spread of the virus or the virus entering into our school system, I think everyone will be on board with that. I really do. I was only going to even name the store. I was going to Costco the other day when I saw a young elementary level student that was coming across the parking lot with her parents, and she donned the mask halfway through the parking lot, took the initiative, and I looked at that and said, well, that was a sign that the child, this particular child, as with many, they don't mind the mask if they see the merit within it. So what the NLTA are suggesting, I would be on board with that, to know that we ought to look at further enhancing, and I hate using the word mandatory, the usage of masks. And if we look at the percentage of vaccines, Linda, that are out there, we aim for 70-80% success rate with the vaccine, and we feel good at that. We often default to masks and say we got to have 100%. Well, if we've got 80-90% usage of masks within the schools, that is a great achievement. And it's too late now for class size, even though that I think basically from the start is probably something we really should have looked closely at in order to have a system that could make sure and handle the occurrence of a virus within the school.
My guests today on Target are the PC education critic Craig Pardee, who we just heard from, and finance critic Tony Wakeham. We'll bring him into the conversation right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guests today are Craig Pardee, he's the PC education critic, and finance critic Tony Wakeham. And Tony, I'll bring you in the conversation here now because you have a little bit of experience in this area as the former CEO of Labrador Grenfell Health. What do you make of, you know, the current COVID situation here in Newfoundland and Labrador?
Well, you know, it's, first of all, you know, I'm going to reference the 23 people, as you mentioned in your preamble, that currently have tested positive for COVID in our province. And sometimes I think we forget when we start talking about COVID and stats and all of that, that these are real people. This is a very serious illness. We have people who have died in our province from COVID, and people get extremely sick with this disease. And so I think it's imperative that as individuals, as communities, as a province, that we do everything we can to prevent the spread of COVID in our province. And unfortunately, we've seen an increase recently in the numbers, but I think the measures that the Chief Medical Officer of Health has put in place and her team, including the decision by government to take the air out of the Atlantic bubble, is a good one. It's something that we certainly call for and agree with.
You know of what you speak. You have a daughter living away who was contracted COVID. Is that correct?
That's correct. And happy to report, of course, that she was fine and doing well.
How did it impact her?
Well, I mean, she was extremely sick for approximately 8 days with COVID. She never had to go to hospital, like you see. There are a lot of cases, obviously, and a lot of them do not require hospitalization, but it does make you extremely sick.
And so she's had no ill effects since?
No.
Thankfully. But a terrible worry for you living so far away.
Yeah, and it goes back to, I guess, all of those people now who are planning on having children or relatives and friends come home for Christmas. We know that those things have to be put on hold, and it's understandable. I think the focus now is to how do we ensure that we keep as much COVID levels down in our province as we can and take every measure that we need to do. And I think, you know, the idea of limiting the travel is most of the cases that we've seen in our province in recent months seem to be travel related.
Things are so different this time around. We had the former funeral home cluster. Now we have three separate clusters, arguably not as big as the one that we saw back in the spring. But things are so different. Everything is open. Things are continuing on as normal, except in, you know, certain circumstances like what we've seen in Grand Bank and Deer Lake and at the school in Deer Lake in particular. We recently saw a restaurant volunteer to shut down for a short period of time as well. So are we taking the right approach here, or do we need to start shutting things down?
No, I think we are taking the right approach. I think that, you know, all of the experts agree. I think that COVID is going to be with us for some time. And obviously testing is going to be a critical part of the strategy to keep the borders open and to stop lockdowns, restrictive lockdowns. We need to keep our economy going. And I think the measures that we take, we need to make sure that at the end of the day, we do them and have people listen to what the Chief Medical Officer of Health and her team are telling us.
Are there any lessons we're learning through all of this, Tony?
I think that we've come through the first phase, and I think we've started to develop other measures, and we continue to look at measures. I mean, the recent McMaster Health Lab study that was released today certainly gives some insight into some of the things that we've been talking about, point of care testing and those type of things. Those results are certainly interesting. I mean, I noticed you've reported them on your network there. So I think that gives us another tool in the toolbox, if you will. And I think we continue to learn and continue to look at how we can prevent this disease and keep it out of our province.
The Premier indicated quite clearly yesterday that point of entry testing is not something that they're considering because, as they put it, it gives people a false sense of hope.
Right. And I think his point was at this time, and again, I look at it, and I look at that McMaster Health Lab study that as you have posted there, and there's certainly, I guess, the interim results from that particular study support a test and reduce quarantine approach. And testing upon arrival, again, it says with a follow-up test to catch later positive results could provide a reasonable path forward. I don't think we've ever talked about point-of-care testing as a be-all, end-all. I think it's another tool in the toolbox, and I think we still have to do everything that the Chief Medical Officer of Health has put in place. But this may be just another tool that we can use, and how we roll that out and how effective it will be. I mean, I think that's a work in progress, but I don't think we should simply throw it out. I think it's something that we continue to look at and find a way to use. And maybe starting off, Linda, essential workers might have been the appropriate place. I mean, these people are coming into our province literally and going to work. And then there is no isolation period. They simply isolate when they go back to wherever they're potentially staying. And, you know, well, first of all, I guess the question of the whole essential worker piece is another topic as to why anybody would be needed to come to work in Newfoundland and Labrador if there's somebody here in Newfoundland and Labrador who could do the work. But when in the particular time now in COVID, when we have COVID on our borders, that one would think if there's Newfoundlanders and Labradorians that are capable of doing the work, we should reduce our risk of COVID transmission by saying that the only people that need to come in are people who actually cannot do the work here in Newfoundland and Labrador.
And you raised an interesting point there, because the essential worker piece, I think, is one that opened a lot of our eyes to what exactly is going on there. Why are we bringing in this degree of essential workers, and why are they needed?
And again, it comes down to, again, you know, there may have been the contracts are there, and there's companies from outside our province that have work that they're doing here in our province. We all understand that. But this is not normal times. And if we can reduce the number of people required to enter our province, when we have our own skilled workforce here capable of doing those jobs, and we've heard the stories, we've heard the things about carpenters and plasterers and all of those type of workers where people are sitting home and somebody from outside of our province is coming in to do that work. And again, that's an issue in itself. But I think that, you know, maybe if we have a point of entry testing, if you want to start and pilot it, maybe essential workers might be a place to start. But clearly, like I said, this study from McMaster certainly highlights some of the opportunities there. And again, I think I don't think the premier has said no to it. I think he's talked about it at this particular time. So we look forward to engaging with the premier. And obviously, we all are going to take the advice of the chief medical officer of health and work with that.
These are stressful times for everyone, of course, but arguably among those who are most stressed are people who work in the healthcare system and rotational workers, because we've had quite a few cases. Almost all the cases that we've had in Newfoundland and Labrador have been traced back to travel one way or another. And in recent days, it's been linked to rotational workers coming back home, rightfully so. And they've been asking for point of entry testing for ever so long, not, they say, as an excuse to get that test and then go gallivanting around town, but as an added precautionary measure. How do you feel about our approach towards rotational workers in this province?
I think, Linda, the rotational workers in our province have endured a disproportionate personal sacrifice. I mean, the concern about their well-being, the stress on them, the stress on their families. I think that, you know, there's about 20,000 rotational workers in our province, which is about 10% of our total workforce. A lot of these are in rural areas. You know, these people chose to stay in Newfoundland and Labrador to live, despite the fact that we don't have jobs for them here in our province. And that's something that, again, we've got to really focus on, creating more jobs and more opportunities here. But they go away to work and they come back home. They come back here, their families are here, their homes are here. And unfortunately, for most of them, it's a 14-day turnaround, which happens to coincide with, again, the 14-day requirement for COVID. So, you know, they've been really hard hit by COVID. Even if they don't get it, they still are being hard hit by the fact that for them, it really places a tremendous stress. So I think that anything we can do, the chief medical officer of health has certainly attempted to address the concerns and the issues there, and they've put different measures in place. And anything else we can do. If point of care testing, as this study alluded to, can actually reduce and show that someone is positive at the beginning, then great. And according to that particular study that was done, the majority of people that tested positive were actually positive upon arrival. So, you know, there appears to be some benefit to doing it based on that particular study. Now, I recognize it's only one study, but again, it's more evidence, and this is all about evidence gathering, and that's, I'm sure that it'll be considered, and I'm sure that the Chief Medical Officer of Health and her team will look at this, and I think it's something that government maybe needs to play a little bit of a role here on the essential worker side, especially in talking to companies about the need for these workers to come in. And on the point of entry testing piece, I recognize, you know, you just can't open it up to everybody, but maybe there's a pilot project to be done. Maybe there is some way of getting this point of entry testing available to some of these workers, you know.
My guests today on Target St. John's are opposition education critic Craig Pardee, and we just heard from opposition finance critic Tony Wakeham. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guests today on Target are opposition members, education critic Craig Pardee and finance critic Tony Wakeham. And Craig, we'll go to you now. You're the member for Bonavista. No doubt you have a lot of families in your area who have rotational workers in their ranks. What are you hearing from them?
Well, I think Tony stated it right. I think our heart goes out to those workers because they do find it very tough when they arrive, and I would think that they're very compliant, Linda, with what the regulations and the guidelines would be for them. In fact, I'm not aware of too many that would not have been compliant with the guidelines that we have in place. But they find it tough. There is no doubt about that. I know the Premier had mentioned about having, if they could have the 1 month shift and get back for 1 month off and do that as opposed to the 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. That makes good sense. If ever that could occur, that is that would be solid and much better for those that would be here. But they find it challenging. But for the most part, they're doing what is expected of them.
Are they getting targeted in the community or on social media?
No, I think one thing about rural Newfoundland, Linda, is that people are vigilant about what's going on in their community and who's been where they're coming from. So I would think every rotational worker would be conscious of the fact that everyone is aware that they just arrived home. And I think that adds as another added layer that would be in rural Newfoundland to know that everyone is aware of all the movements or what had happened. So, but I think we've had good compliance with that. And, I don't see that being an issue with the rotational workers as far as in the district of Bonavista. It is a concern. When I say that, I think the concern would be in the fact of whether family members can leave the homes of rotational workers and continue to the work sites, whether it be the school system or the long-term care in Bonavista. But we are trusting to Dr. Fitzgerald and her team to know that they're looking at the epidemiology and the guidelines. So I'm sure and would hope that they do have that covered to make sure that that is not something that we ought to be concerned with going forward. And I think I hear that mentioned from a lot of residents. And again, because they isolate into the home with others. And I'm sure that most of these workers do take whatever precautions within the homes to make sure that they're isolating within the home of which they're serving their isolation time period.
And that's the concern, isn't it? Because how do you allay the fears of the public who are saying, well, this person just came home, their spouse works in this store
yep.
or this senior's home, and their kids are going to school every day? How do you allay those fears that people would naturally have but may be unfounded or unfair?
I don't have an answer for them, but that has come up many times. I had recently a Mr. Plowman that reached out to me at the same question. I spoke with some others and so on, but the only thing would be to trust in what Dr. Fitzgerald would have. But it's hard for people to get their head around that, how somebody could be into a household,
and they isolate while the others that would be in the house with them would be going about their regular business within the guidelines that we have. But I'm not questioning the guidelines from the chief medical office, because I would trust that she's done a good job, and I would hope that they would be in the know as to where we ought to be with that. And I often say, to allay the fears, is that we ought not to be too concerned, because I would hope that the concern would have been raised and addressed if indeed it was and had merit. But it is hard for people to understand and get their head around how that could happen.
Tony, for a period of time anyway, in the first wave, for sure, there were regular meetings of the various parties to get the latest on the COVID situation in Newfoundland and Labrador and be fully informed, I suppose. Those meetings sort of petered off over time. I know the opposition parties have been calling for a resumption of those meetings. Where does that stand now?
Yes, Linda, it was a very good committee at the time. It was our leader's idea, I guess, to start this when it first started back in March 2020. And Premier Ball at the time certainly stepped up and made sure that we were involved and we were able to raise issues and, I guess, help shape a government's response. And so I think the last time we actually met was early October. So now we've been told, I guess, that the... Once upon a time, we were told the committee had been terminated, but now we've heard or reached out that they want to start an all-party committee again. And, of course, we're always interested in participating, but I think the key word there, Linda, is all. If we're going to be part of a committee, then we need to be have access to all the information and all of the data, and trust that this isn't about whether you're a PC, a Liberal, or an NDP. It's simply about the people of the province of Newfoundland and Labrador. And if we sit on a committee, we're there to raise issues and raise questions and concerns and to try to come up with strategies and suggestions that will help keep the incidence of COVID down in our province. And, you know, so that's the type of thing that we'd certainly want to be involved in.
What was the structure of those meetings, and what kind of input did the all the parties have?
Well, there were good things and bad things. There were normally we would meet in the mornings by conference call, and I was part of that group. And we would get together, and we would, of course, get an update, and then we would have an opportunity to raise some issues and concerns and questions and get some answers. And having said all that, though, I think it's also critical that we not forget that our role as a media and as media people and as opposition, that, you know, we have to be prepared to ask government tough questions, and we shouldn't steer away from that, because I think that's what our job is, to ask questions and ask government to provide us with some answers, especially when people have some concerns about some things. And communication is the key here, and open lines of communication. But again, one of the things that was bothersome, I guess, is that you go to talk about an all-party committee, and then decisions get made that you're not aware of, or you find out through a media release at the same time as you've had a meeting that same day. So there are things that need to be worked out. And as I said, if we're going to be part of an all-party committee, then I think you need to put the put those hats aside, and we need to turn around and be brought in and be part of that decision-making process, and understand exactly what the information is and be privy to it.
So were they becoming confrontational, or they simply weren't providing you with the answers you were looking for?
No, they were never confrontational. It's just that at some point you found yourself learning information, I guess, that you that wasn't revealed to you at a particular time. And announcements were being made when those announcements necessarily weren't shared with you ahead of time. So you were kind of surprised to hear it. And if you're part of a committee, I would think that that's where that should be discussed. And you know, I think you can trust anybody that sits on a committee like that, that the confidential nature, nobody sits on a committee to try to embarrass government. It's not about that. It's about protecting the people of Newfoundland and Labrador. And you know, shrinking and listening to the advice of the chief medical officer of health and her team.
So, has there been any indication of when they may resume?
There's some. There is a potential meeting scheduled for this Wednesday afternoon.
Do you expect that the usual COVID updates that the provincial government has been providing the public, will they increase in number as well? There seemed to be in some indication yesterday that they may be considering that.
I would think that as the number of cases, if the number of cases continue to rise and the issues develop, then I think those updates are important. I also think that it's important. Part of all of this, Linda, has to be the importance of keeping our health system whole. Don't forget there were a number of procedures and appointments and everything that got canceled way back in March, and we're still trying to recover from that. And so it's going to be very important as we go forward to make sure that we keep our health system available for getting through that backlog and getting people the tests they need, the surgeries they need. And so that becomes part of the reasons for making sure that we try to limit the amount and the extent of COVID in our province.
Tony, you're the finance critic. What kind of an impact has this had on the province overall economically?
Well, I think you've certainly seen the impacts of it on the small businesses, especially throughout our entire provinces. We've seen companies and that haven't even opened since closed their doors and have still not opened throughout the province. We've seen other businesses that have been shut down. So there's been some help forthcoming from the federal government. I'm glad to see they finally decided to do something about the rent subsidy issue, which we've been clamoring for all along, that it should be going to the actual tenant. And so there's been some movement on that. There's been some other programs that have been announced now provincially. So, you know, all of that helps. But again, you know, we've got to keep our businesses open. We've got to find a way to do that, to keep as much normality as we can in our day-to-day activities. And I think that's got to be the goal. Nobody wants to go backwards here.
And I want to explore that a little bit more when we come back after the break, how to keep the economy open while keeping those COVID numbers down. My guests today on Target St. John's are two members of the PC opposition. They are education critic Craig Party and finance critic Tony Wakeham. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And my guests today are education critic Craig Party and finance critic Tony Wakeham with the PC opposition. And Craig, now that we're heading into the winter months, we've seen the, temporary suspension of the Atlantic bubble here in Newfoundland and Labrador over a two-week period. Is it better to keep that Atlantic bubble closed in the meantime?
I would think to close it right now is the right move. As to see where the epidemiology or the number of cases that we have all around us, and in particular in the Atlantic provinces, I would think based on that, it'll determine as to what we do going forward. But again, now, anytime we can reduce the amount coming into the province or the virus coming in, then it's a good thing. And if we've got locations where there's a high probability or percentage of the population which has the virus coming in, then that's always a good strategy. And I know in our winter months, traditionally, we don't have a lot of traffic. And I know in the summertime, when we look at the hospitality, Newfoundland, Labrador, and the amount of traffic, I can see at that point in time. But I know that in the wintertime, when the virus is probably the most daunting and potentially dangerous, then I would think, that's the right move, and monitor as we go forward. Maintain it, keep it closed if the numbers are increased, and if by some chance is not, which I doubt very much, then we would certainly open it again, or ought to.
Tony, the tourism industry, of course, in Newfoundland and Labrador has been growing dramatically in recent years, and it was especially hard hit by this pandemic with no real end in sight, at least not until we have a reliable vaccine that's out there and people are vaccinated and vaccination rates are high. So what will this mean going forward? Is enough being done to help our tourism sector?
Well, you know, Lynn, I think that the staycation program this summer was a good start. But you're right; it's it doesn't replace all of the traffic. But I think, you know, the key there is government sitting down with businesses, listening to businesses and to what they need in terms of, you know, where we are in this. The decision on the Atlantic bubble again, you know, the 2-week closure is a good one, because even the Canadian Federation of Independent Business has applauded that decision. You know, it's keeping things open is much better than shutting everything down, obviously. And right now, you know, we've been lucky. When you look at other provinces and where they are at this point in time, they're shutting things down. We've been able to keep our businesses open. We've been able to keep our restaurants open. So I think that's the critical piece here, is managing our COVID impact so that, you know, doing the things we need to do to keep our businesses open and keep our economy moving and without going backwards. And, you know, that's going to be the key. And again, you know, if we in 2 weeks' time, if things have changed, you can reopen a bubble. But if not, then we, as Craig alluded to, we keep it closed. And again, it's about, you know, government stepping up, listening to what the business community are asking for and finding a way to help them through get through this.
Tony, is there any more room for stimulus packages? We saw the success of the renovation program that the provincial government put out, but is it money well spent?
Well, I think so, because I think that those type of programs encourage homeowners to certainly build. The only detriment to that whole program, I think, this summer, is everybody who's tried to build anything has been the extreme cost of materials, which seemed to get really expensive. But I think that was a good program, and I think there are things that you know, we've got to get creative, and in order to get creative with the times of things, we've got to encourage our own Newfoundlanders and Labradorians to move around our own province, and when it comes to tourism, and to make them comfortable and feel comfortable in doing it, and that type of thing, whatever incentives, listening to the people involved in those industries, and especially out in their small rural areas and stuff, you know, you can get an idea of some of the things that they will need support with. Some of them, quite frankly, unfortunately, and this type of thing may not survive, and that's hard to see when somebody has built up a business and have been big successful, but now COVID comes along and destroys everything they've worked for. So I think it's imperative for government to always be working with them and to listen to them and listen to the creative suggestions they have. I think there's always room to provide stimulus, and we need to keep that going.
Craig, one of the conversations over the last few months has been how COVID has really shone a light on, one, the cost of food. Almost everybody I speak to is talking about their grocery bills of late, and food security here in Newfoundland and Labrador. Is that a concern in your district?
Well, I would think it's a concern everywhere, food security, Linda. There's no doubt about that. And I know that many people have mentioned about the price of food is increasing, what we have. There is no doubt that we as a province need to be more self-sufficient in what we can produce here. And there's no doubt we need to make great strides to know that we've got to produce locally. So any effort to make sure that we would increase or be self-sustainable in a food source is wonderful. And I think we've come a long way with the milk producers. You know, we have milk in schools, milk readily available that would be here within the province. But I think it's probably a lot more that we can do with that. So whatever we can do to produce here as a province to make us more self-sufficient, that is something that we certainly have to be doing.
Tony, what about the impact on mental health and addictions in Newfoundland and Labrador? Even people who, you know, who I know who are incredibly resilient are saying to me, you know, this is really hitting me hard.
Yeah, I think I don't think we can underestimate the impact, and that's of what COVID has had on families and individuals as a result of the closures, the shutdowns, the inability to see family members, the inability to visit with family members, and for members of your family to come home, and all of those things are real. And so those type of programs that are out there and supports, I mean, we need to make sure we focus on those. I don't think that we can underestimate the impact on people. But, that's important for us then to, if you know of somebody who is not feeling well, we need to be reaching out to people. Don't be afraid. I mean, Newfoundlanders and Labradorians are known for their hospitality. And while we can't necessarily go around hugging people, we can still pick up a phone and call someone and chat with them and ask them how they're doing and anything we can do for them, So I think it starts with the individual and the community. And I think we all have a role to play in that.
And we've got less than 4 minutes to go now, but Craig, it's all been very stressful. It's continuing to be stressful. Is there any, uplifting message that you have for listeners today?
Well, I can speak from my experiences in the school system, Linda. One thing that would be the most uplifting is that our school children are in good hands. I've worked with several staffs, and they are quality individuals, and I would think that they can certainly put your mind at ease to know that whatever the guidelines would be within the school system, the importance of maintaining the cohorts in the system, the importance of making sure that the building is as clean as it possibly could within the time we've got, I would think that we're in good hands within the system, knowing many of the professionals that work within our building. So they are doing certainly the best they possibly could within the situation that they've been given. One unfortunate thing would be from the start, which would be a conversation for a whole show, would be the size of the classes that some in our metro area would have to work with. That is a far more daunting challenge than what we would have in rural Newfoundland, where we have the class size issue is not certainly nearly as significant as what it would be. So maintaining the cohort, feeling a sense of security in a class with 35 students is much different than what it would be, as I said earlier, in a class of 15. But the professionalism of the students or the teachers and the staffs that we have working in our schools and administrators is second to none.
Tony, last word will go to you. Any positive messages?
Well, Lynn, I think we can take a lot of positivity in the fact that our province has done extremely well in managing COVID. And, hats off to Dr. Fitzgerald and her team who have led us through that. We need to continue to listen to the advice. I always say the best thing you can do is look in the mirror, because it starts with every individual being responsible for themselves, doing the simple things that we've all been told, washing your hands, wearing a mask, keep your hands away from your face. In our communities, in our province, I think there's lots of things that we can do. There's good news on the horizon. They talk about vaccines. So, it's been a tough year, but we will get through it. And hopefully 2021 will be better, and it looks like there are things coming. But I think for now is, let's keep our businesses open, and let's just stay safe, and let's make sure everybody adheres to the recommendations of the Chief Medical Officer of Health, and protect yourself.
John Haggie's mantra all along has been that this is not a sprint, it's a marathon, marathon. So we will take that into account and try to, wait for those vaccines to come. There's a lot of promising news on that horizon. Gentlemen, I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Linda. Like I said, I think we're in good shape, and we'll continue to work hard to make sure we maintain it.
Craig Party and Tony Wakeham, my guest today on Target St. John's, thank you both.
Thank you, Linda.
And thanks for listening.